Hello, everybody. Welcome to a special TF Labs Live. We are going to be talking about Twitter getting hacked. This is our first time doing a live panel, 100% live. So I'm really excited and really looking forward to it. Be on the lookout for more shows like this, where what we'll do is we'll find experts in a particular topic and we'll make it as relevant as possible. So if you weren't aware, yesterday Twitter experienced a massive, massive hack where someone got hold of the personal accounts of some of the most powerful people in the world, presidents, celebrities, multi-billionaire business entrepreneurs. And it looks like it was done at the platform level. So lots of crazy things happened, and I'm really excited for this conversation. So I'm going to go ahead and invite my guest. But before I do, if you are watching this right now, please just do us a quick favor and just say hello. Let us know where you're from and start asking your questions. We're going to do our best to make sure that we go ahead and answer as many questions as possible. And as well, make sure that you are following TF Labs. We're tflabs.io. And you can follow us on Twitter at @tflabs_. So with that, I'm going to welcome my guest to the stream. Hello, everybody. How are y'all doing?
Pretty good.
Good.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us. I messaged each one of these gentlemen individually earlier today, and I was like, hey, can you join us for a great conversation about what happened? And so I really appreciate you all being quick to do that. So before we get started, I'd love if you could each introduce yourselves real quickly, and then we'll just get straight to the topic. So to make it simple, I'm going to go with how you're aligned on my screen. Ron, will you go ahead and introduce yourself first?
Yeah. good afternoon. Good evening, my time. Ron Nixon, I'm the VP for government and defense at Polyverse. I've been doing the cyber bit for coming up on 30 years now. I retired out of the Army a few years ago, where my final job, I was the CTO, lead technical guy for cyber operations at Army Cyber Command, helping manage an enterprise of 1.4 million users that was literally attacked by nation state level guys every day. After that, I did a couple of small jobs and with a couple of small companies as a cybersecurity consultant. And then I spent some time at CSRA and GDIT, General Dynamics Information Technology, as the CTO for the Army sector. And I was the technical lead for our cyber practice for the defense, which is a $3.7 billion business unit.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Seems like you know quite a bit about security then. Riley, if you could go next, please.
Oh, thanks. My name is Riley Eller. I've been a hacker since the 80s. I was a software pirate when I was a little kid. I went good guy when I became an adult, of course. Did industrial programming and business automation for the 90s. And then got really back into hacking. I was involved in the introduction of DDoS attacks to the world. I'm one of the patent holders on fuzzing, invented mesh routing protocols, a whole bunch of really fun projects that I've been able to be a part of. Just sold that mesh routing company to Nokia a couple of years ago, and I've come on now with Rubica to bring enterprise mobile cybersecurity to individuals.
Excellent, thanks so much. And Haseeb, if you could introduce yourself, please.
Yeah, I'm Haseeb Awan. Sorry, I've been SIM hacked 4 times. So I started a telecom company, and we prevent high-profile individuals' cell phones from being hacked. So that's what we do. So if you're about SIM swapping, I basically operate in that world. We are anti-SIM swapper. I run my own smaller carrier, MVNO, where we have multiple celebrities, NBA stars, and crypto handlers, and people contact me when they get hacked, SIM swap. But other people who don't want to be sold on the internet, and wants to make sure that the communication is protected, they contact me.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, let's get right to it. So yesterday there was a massive Twitter hack. At first, when the information was coming out, I was like, oh, well, this must be, you know, at the API level. And it's, you know, someone else resting on top of Twitter that's causing this. And then it was like, okay, well, maybe this is individual, but it seems like it was at a massive proportion of getting internal at the platform level. Love if one of you guys want to just set the stage real quick for what happened so we can level set for everybody, and then let's just get straight to it. Anybody go for it.
So I can tell you what happened in my case. Because my part of the job I do, I have contacts in dark web and people who are actually hacking, right? So they normally contact me sometime, sometime for fun, sometime for just teasing me, right? So the thing is that, okay, so what happened is that, okay, so what I'm saying, so what happened, I think yesterday around like maybe noon, I got a message from one of my contacts and he said, Twitter will be fun today. And I said, okay, I have no idea what this means, right? Like, you know, they run bots and everything. And after like 4 o'clock, around 4 o'clock, I start getting these messages around that, hey, this thing is getting hacked and everything. And then he started posting messages. So then I posted a screenshot. I said, you are lying. So he then posted a screenshot that I posted that I think I went viral. I think we have over 1 million views on that right now in one day. And so I got contacted by multiple hackers. And I, as per my story, as per what I've been told. So there's a big industry that operates underworld, and they allow people to sim swap, and they allow people to, and they will also get your username. So imagine you want to get to release username, they will basically pay someone in Twitter and get your username. So generally, it's a transaction between $1,000 to $3,000. And yesterday, what happened was this guy befriended a Twitter rep on a Discord server on a gaming server, and he paid him $2,000. And the goal wasn't to like sim swap, it was just to get some couple of username. They started with a username called Six. Six belongs to a guy who's a homeless, but like, you know, he was a very smart hacker and he got into New York Times servers, I believe. And he ended up in a lot of trouble. And he started a community called 26 Hackers. So anyways, his account got hacked. His username is @Six. And then they went for like good, cool looking domain. And then I think they got into Elon Musk, and then they started, it's just becoming fun, right? At that point in time, like, you know, it's basically if you have murdered someone, you say, okay, let me murder everyone, right? Because you have lost your senses.
Yeah.
But well, and like even at a bigger.
Right. And even like, you know, like at the most, you know, from a consumer standpoint, meaning like if we break this down for everybody, essentially you had people like Jeff Bezos, President Barack Obama, Bill Gates, Elon Musk, Kanye West, Joe Biden, Donald Trump, all of these Twitter accounts were saying, hey, send me Bitcoin and I will give you money, right? Like, and so, you know, Ron, for example, like, you know, to my knowledge, basically what happened is these hackers were able to infiltrate someone that was working at Twitter as well to get platform access. And, you know, it seems like that's a very, that's a vulnerability that probably could have been avoided, right?
Yeah. So, so everybody, you'll hear people say all the time, right? What's the, you know, the soft underbelly to cyber, any cybersecurity infrastructure is the user, right? Or the administrator, right? And so, and kind of what Haseeb was saying is I've heard both sides of this. Where one is it was a sophisticated or somewhat sophisticated phishing attack on key staff members at Twitter. And then I've also heard the other side of it that actually somebody was actually compromised at Twitter and they were bribed to release, you know, to give them access to the control panel. So I've heard both. And if you look at it either way, it's a perfect social engineering operation. I mean, they did all of the right steps. They did their reconnaissance and their investigation very thoroughly into Twitter itself. And then once they did that, then they did a massive social engineering attack against, you know, everybody's followers on Twitter, right? So they set up and started hitting the Bitcoin accounts first, right? The Bitcoin users and endorsers first, and then they went after, you know, then they went after Bezos and Gates and Apple and everybody else. And so, if you take something that's even relatively simple, like if I was running an operation or if I was testing somebody, if I took a group of people and I took a population and I trained them on phishing, right? I trained them on phishing attacks. I would still get, when I turn around and when I was done with the training, if I launched the phishing attack right after they were done, I still would get 3 to 10% of the people clicking on those links, right? So the same thing for this attack is I'm still getting a small percentage of the population. But if you look at the user base, I mean, you're talking tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of followers between all of those accounts. And so if I only get 1 or 2%, you know, 1 to 2% to respond to that, even if it's just a portion, you know, a small portion of a Bitcoin, I'm going to rake in some money pretty quick.
Yeah, I wanted to correct one thing. Donald Trump's account wasn't hacked. That was actually a source of some conversation because the answer that came back quickly from some insiders said that Trump had specific new security measures enacted for his own account because he was so worried about somebody pulling a SIM attack on the phone or doing the standard things that were done. So it's potential that they just hadn't rolled out a new level of security to more users yet, which is obviously a question. Yeah. Decision as we see for all the people who did get hacked, but possible that
I appreciate you correcting me on that. Thanks. But go ahead, Riley. Sorry.
Yeah. The you know, Kevin Mitnick always says social engineering always works, and it's like the whole business model of an entire new generation of fraudsters. So, you know, I think that it's always going to be the case that if we don't defend the whole human in some way and get all the way around their home life as well and make sure that they're not being attacked through their home networks and their home social and gaming encounters. I think we need to have that same kind of attention to security, even though, of course, as the recent Bezos phone hack demonstrates, you know, nobody wants to have the corporations spying on their stuff. So there's a weird change there.
Yeah, definitely not. And, you know, for those that are listening, please feel free to ask your questions. Like I said, we're going to do our best to make sure that we answer them. So we get a good understanding of who's available. Just do us a favor. If you're here, just type hello or anything you want, just so we can kind of get a gauge of who's actually on watching us right now. You know, I want to touch, Ron, you kind of touched about this, about like kind of like the money opportunity, and Steve, I bet you probably have some opinions on this as well. Is, you know, do you think it really was about, was this hack really about acquiring Bitcoin or acquiring money, or was this more to like show and display a vulnerability?
No.
What are your all thoughts on that?
So this industry operates right, like even as of today, you can buy anyone Instagram username right now. You can pay anyone from $1,000. If I want to get into, like, imagine Ron's account, I can pay someone $1,000, then he'll give me the account, right? They generate between $1,000 to $3,000. So when they start off, they start off as a fun, and then they say, let's do this. Okay. And then they just got on, like, you know, it's like, think about like a person who has a gun and now he didn't intend to shoot, but he shot one. And once he shot one, then he was just, okay, man, let's do this. And it become bigger than life. And because it happens pretty quickly. But no, they are not smart people. If they were smart people, they would have done multiple things. The power they had, man, $100,000 is like penny. Like, you can literally destroy countries. You can literally destroy anyone. So I'll give you a simple example. Like, imagine if Apple said that, hey, we are not producing Apple phone anymore. You know,
right.
You're shutting down your company. Yeah. You know, or Alibaba is shutting down tomorrow. Or, like, you know, we are banning, like, Donald Trump introduced a war on Canada, you know?
Totally. Riley, you look like you have some opinions there. What are your thoughts?
I was just going to say, like, God, they could have gotten 1,000 times more money just by asking for less and not doing the stupid Ponzi scheme tax.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they just thought that through and said, please consider donating $9 worth of Bitcoins to COVID care for relief in your area. It'll be in your name. Just here to send the money right along. They could, that thing would have had they would have had $100 million before morning.
Yeah, I would almost venture to say that they were technically adept, but socially ignorant of what they were being able to do. Right? Because you're right. I mean, both of you guys are right. I mean, they could have done incredible damage there. They could have gotten lots more money out of it, and they did. You know, like, and if you look at the initial setups from the social standpoint, it's almost maybe as if somebody had helped them along that path because the accounts that they set up, you know, for all of the, you know, getting their attention within the Bitcoin space and then going after all of those high profile accounts. I mean, that the high profile accounts helped spread it, and it seemed to be a pretty decent setup. But like you said, they asked for too much, and then they shot their, you know, they took their one shot rather just all over the place, right? They could have gotten easier.
And that's why my question was, you know, a little bit ago, is like, was this really about money, or was this more about testing a vulnerability, or like showcasing a vulnerability? You know what I mean?
We had a very technical joyride.
Yeah,
it was exactly right. Like, they got on it and they were like, "Wait, this goes fast." It's like,
yeah, right.
And then they
imagine being the black hat, or like the person who all of a sudden, you know, wanted to raise their hand originally that they did do something. They're like, "Now, no, I don't want to tell anybody it was me." Right. So, no, that's interesting. And, you know, so moving on to the next topic, why do you think they chose Bitcoin? You know, for those that aren't familiar with Bitcoin, Bitcoin is a digital cryptocurrency that a lot of people use it because it's peer-to-peer. And there's this notion that you can kind of be in control of your own money. And there's also a privacy layer in the sense that you also own your keys to how you essentially release those funds. And so, you know, you have people when they were talking about this on the news, for example, saying that, you know, this Bitcoin scam. And, you know, I would argue that it wasn't a Bitcoin scam. It was a different scam, but it was using Bitcoin as the medium to cash in on the scam, right? Anybody want to kind of touch that one?
I think they always say to someone who's thinking of committing a crime, like, are you sure you know exactly what you're going to do when you succeed? Have you really thought this through? Yeah. I think that's just what this is they wanted to be sure that they were not wrong about what was happening. Mm-hmm. And to be 100% globally demonstrated that they succeeded. So, I mean, I think whoever achieved however much ego out of this, that's probably the greatest reward. I mean, $100,000. I don't know if I had done this, if I would even be brave enough to collect the BTC. Because Who knows what the pooling exchanges and brokerages have implemented on the back end for transacting money laundering, you know, back to the regulators or whatever.
And you got to remember that if it goes into that address, once that address sends out, you know, that's how you figure out where it was, right?
Yeah, and you don't even know if the gains that they got were actually true gains, right? So because you'll see a lot of that sometimes where you'll have people sending money in for a scam, you'll have people sending money into an account that are actually part of the operation, so that people see money flowing into the wallet, and so then
that
entices everybody, like, "Oh, I got to be first," kind of
thing.
That's
a great point.
And so it's that. So, you know, how much of it did they gain was actually truly gains? And then, you know, or was this a test run for something different? There is always that possibility of, I mean, it's kind of a rather high visibility test run, which you don't normally want to do. But, you know, I mean, it could be that too. But use Bitcoin just because it's easy. I mean, that's what it comes down to they're already operating in that space. And they, you know, and they hosted out a Cloudflare, and they used NameSilo to set it up, right? So both of those organizations take Bitcoin too, so that makes it easy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are still learning the lesson from the takedown of Silk Road, which had where the only thing that really went wrong was a decision to use standard freight, and the machines, the servers, when they were delivered, which had been paid for in cash or some crazy thing, were still delivered to a human who had to show ID and sign. And so that's how they personally got caught. So I think a lot of people have been trying to figure out how to get away with the, you know, the blow off where they vanished with all the money in the digital world. And unless you're like a pretty good sized cartel of like ATM frauds, it's hard to turn cash into actual like digital ones and zeros into dollars.
Yeah. Or whatever.
Yeah. Haseeb, any thoughts on that? Like, why Bitcoin?
Man, it's just easy. That's what they know, right? It's just easy, convenient. Like, what else do you want to do? Obviously, by the end of the day, you want something. They have learned Bitcoin. And I slightly disagree with that you cannot catch. Like, there's a lot of transactions that can go through that happen in dark web that can pass through law enforcement agency thing. So unless this is made like a terrorism charge or like something like a crazy national security charge. If it's just a regular crime, like hacking someone, this will not get prosecuted. So it all depends on whatever the charges are. Because this is a matter of national security, I believe. and also about like how these companies operate. So, but Bitcoin is what they know. And if you understand the total, I think they have collected over like maybe $15-16 million through these hacks in total, like those crypto hacks of like, you know, send me Ethereum back. Mm-hmm. I think the total amount is like $17 or $18 million. It's not a joke, you know? And if you consider like, you know, Michael Turpin, Simpson, yeah. And if you consider, I think there are probably total Bitcoin coins could be maybe in billions of dollars. It's not a joke. So what do you do? What do you take? Like, you would not be taking Ethereum because why not Bitcoin? It's just a simple thing. Like, the question is, I don't see a reason why not to use Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the perfect currency for this.
Well, if you only want to take money from people who
sure.
deliver you $1,000 in like 1 minute, right? If you want to get a trillion or a million or a billion people to give you a dollar each, then
Bitcoin. But then how do you take it? Like, you can not take credit card, obviously. You know, like, I don't see any other mechanism to receive money. Like, I don't know. Maybe you guys have better understanding than I do. But
I mean, if I would have set something up like this, I would have used Bitcoin too, right?
So Bitcoin is the perfect thing. And you can just hold on, not move it for maybe 5 years. Just to give you an example, there are a lot of like, you know, where you can transfer money, you can shuffle money, you can do a lot of stuff. So I think Bitcoin is the perfect currency for that. And unfortunately, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's move on to this notion of decentralized identity and, you know, decentralization versus centralization. You know, there's a lot of people on Twitter saying like, hey, like one of the reasons why this was an issue is because Twitter is a centralized institution, or this notion of like key management of how passwords are stored, because, you know, there's essentially just basic password management, but not necessarily like a call it a LastPass type of, you know, encryption or key store. So, you know, what are your guys' thoughts overall? Does if Twitter was a decentralized system with decentralized identity, or if there was like, you know, private and public key type of password management, would this have happened?
If the admin can mess it up, and the admin got paid to mess it up, and the admin messed it up.
Jonathan
is mentioning
it's a social issue.
But Jonathan is mentioning that what if he doesn't have the power to do so? Like, only Elon Musk could log in once he have the key.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how many humans you can ask to decide that something is true or false in a row as part of a business. I think asking a human to participate is already a challenge. Like, you better get it right the first time, is how we all think of it. So every human who's in the loop is a weakest point, period. So we have to look at them as like real risks and treat them like treasure that could fall apart.
Yeah, but, and you just reached to a point, right? If you need to be able to scale, you have to centralize to a degree. You have to. You can't get the economies of scale out of your equipment, out of your bandwidth, out of your people if you don't centralize some of it. I mean, you can leave a lot of it up to automation, and they probably could have solved, maybe some of this could have been with automation. These are high profile accounts, you know, was there checks and balances for somebody to access them? Mm-hmm. I know if you start getting into sensitive systems within the intelligence community or even banking, right? I can't unilaterally walk across Bank of America's environment and access every database on my own as a sysadmin. There's checks and balances there. And you know, is there something like that there? You know, and I would also venture to say that the social media platforms are still learning their level of importance and what they need to leverage on their internal security mechanisms. In my opinion, I just think that they're still just figuring out. I wish I could have a better way of saying it, but it's that oh shit moment of this is what's coming my way. You know, how do I deal with this? And I am really important because everybody wants my, you know, I mean, the CEO, he's going to have a wonderful day with Congress for the next couple of, he's going to have a wonderful day the next couple of weeks dealing with Congress over this. I don't envy him at all.
Go ahead, Azeem.
I just think that, frankly, with decentralization, I'll give you an example. I made the first Bitcoin ATM 7 years ago. So we have thousands of them, and we used to get people who call us that, hey, I got a new key. I lost my paper. And I have like $2,000 on it. And we said, we have no idea because, you know, we don't store those keys. And they said, what the hell is this? Like, you know, no, I want my refund. I want you to send me Bitcoin again. The problem with the, like we are probably among the top 1% who understand this industry very well. And I'm just being like modest that, okay, you know, it's 1% because a lot of people don't understand that. I can give you example. People do not have, I read somewhere that 95% of people on Coinbase at one point in time did not even have a two-factor. I'm not even talking about SMS two-factor or Authybase. I'm just saying not two-factor at all. Right now, 99% of people use SMS as a two-factor as of today. 99% people, you know.
And zero.
Sorry?
For anyone listening, the correct number is zero. Zero. Yeah. Use SMS as two-factor.
But no, but I say that people who use this right now, you know, and they should not use it. Like we get a call from a lot of people and we do hygiene for a lot of people and you'll be surprised of how bad this security hygiene is because people want convenience. Like how can you ask a senator not to download his app on his phone, you know, and not to watch specific video, right? How can you ask a doctor not to like download, give his phone to his kid, you know, and those things. How can you teach people on not to install Nest or these other devices in their car? How can you, like, you know, change your password? Like 95% of people do not change your password every 3 months. Another 4.5% people lie. So that's the problem. Man, I can tell you, like, I basically go to people and say, this is a problem in your cell phone and your data being leaked. And they say, okay, I'll look over it next time. And then they get one, they're hacked and people take security for granted because we live in America, but it's like leaving, and they say companies are willing to, it's like leaving your door open because you believe the cops will come to protect me.
Yeah. Well, and so you hit it perfect, right? It's not part of their day-to-day. It's just not part of the way they do business day-to-day. So I could take, looking back at, you know, working in Afghanistan and walking the street in Kabul at times, right? I didn't walk the same path to my destination, even though it was the same destination. I didn't walk the same path each time, but my environment created that mindset for me. And it's just not, and it's not there every day for everyone. And because, and it's also because the mechanisms are in place to somewhat protect them, not from being hacked, but from the effects of the hack, right? So like if my credit card is compromised and somebody burns $10,000 on my credit card, I call the credit card company and they just wipe it away and they write it off and they're, you know, is a loss later in the year. So there's no mechanism of, I hate to say it, there's no mechanism of pain for people to understand that why security is important. And they're not in that mindset. You know, it's like even two-factor authentication, you're talking about using two-factor authentication and two-factor authentication with SMS isn't great, but it's much better than nothing. And so I would rather have, right, because part of the thing about security, in my opinion, is making yourself a harder target than the person next to you.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You don't have to be the weakest chain. Yeah. Weakest link in a chain.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ron. Yeah.
I want to ask a couple questions real quick from those that are listening. So Emily asks, what does this mean for corporate cybersecurity going forward? How can companies prevent something like this?
Rubica takes the position that we need to protect a whole employee, that one whole employee is the risk and one whole employee is what we have to protect. So we need to apply security solutions in their personal life, maybe like through an HR benefit, where we can say, you know, like it's a health check, right? We give them a little, you know, better pay this year because they've, you know, decided to do something secure so that they were not at risk that their Facebook account is being used to bring an attack into the organization by way of the human. Because whenever the human is the vector,
yeah,
what are you going to do? So we need to protect the whole human. I think it makes a big difference.
Ron, maybe.
I was thinking about that a little bit, what Riley just said, and he's right. So I go back to my toolbox of doing, you know, red teams or playing black hat against an organization, right? And I never blindly went after the network or went after one of the services. You know, if I was going to hit, so let's put it in perspective, right? If I was doing a penetration test of a red team assessment, if you will, against a hedge fund in New York, I hung out in the Starbucks across the street for, you know, the day prior. And I got to understand where their employees were at and why, because I could see their Wi-Fi network sitting on their phones, which Wi-Fi networks they were beaconing out to. you know, and then from there, you know, maybe snag a couple of their work phones, right? Because they were valid targets as far as their employee was concerned. Hit a couple of their work phones, and then I see then I see their Facebook, I see their Twitter, I see everything else that's on their work phone, and it allows me to build this profile to, you know, walk into the space, you know, or digitally walk into the space, if you will. And so, yeah, I mean, you always start with the people, and that's across the board. If you got the concept to protect the whole person, that's where you need to go.
You can think about it like this: like, what company is going to tell anyone in the entire world what is my birthday if I'm an employee? Nobody. No company is ever going to bleed my birthday.
Yep.
But they're going to bleed my name and my city, which you can use on Facebook to go find me. And if you want a friend of a friend to introduce you, then you get my birthday. And if I'm dumb in the way I choose passwords, you've probably figured out a corporate secret without touching any corporate asset.
But really, you are going even further. Like, I can tell you, if you tell me your telephone number, I can tell you even your criminal record if you had anyone.
Yep.
You know, I can tell you how many places have you lived, how many properties do you own,
yes,
what's your social security number, what's your date of birth,
yep,
and pretty much just by telephone number. Like, we Americans have two identity numbers to protect. One is social security number, one is telephone number. And telephone number makes us more exposed because we give it to everyone, you know. It's on our card, and through telephone number, when we do forensic analysis on our customers, we tell them information that they actually have forgot. They say, "Oh my God, how did this came along?" Because data brokerage is a big industry, and it's legal. If you go to White Pages, like a simple website, you can put your telephone number, pay them $10, and it will give you so much information that you'll be actually crazy. So yeah, that's about it.
So how do you prevent it? Part of it is training, but it only goes so far. And then it's the technology to protect the entire person. I know for a while, I don't know if the program is still in place, but the Department of Defense used to issue antivirus out to everybody, right? You could just download it from a common site. You know, it was little things like that that kind of went a long way, you know. But that was really before social engineering was the way to really worm your way into a network, right?
Yeah,
Kevin Mitnick would disagree with that. He's been at that for years.
That's true.
And also, if you understand, like, for security, the problem with the security is that people don't take it seriously because they think no one will come after me. You know, they believe no one will come after me, and it's a very difficult sell. Security is a very difficult sell, especially cybersecurity, because it's easy to sell a lock because people know, okay, it's a better lock, but very difficult to tell you antivirus because antivirus may be simple, but you know, like, I'll give an example. I can guarantee you that anyone who's listening on this call would not have their Wi-Fi router passwords, hidden. It's a small thing on your router that you can do that your password will not be detected. And I can guarantee you that no one in this group would have. And I can also guarantee you that 99% of people would not even do it after listening to this. And the simple thing, removing your, like, disabling your Wi-Fi passwords, it, like, you can just disable it. You can have same password. That's about it. So
yeah, excellent. Well, hey guys, we're gonna wrap it up here. Just like I said, it's a quick 30-minute conversation. I'm really glad you all took the time to chat about this. I want to give you each a minute to just kind of say, like, some closing thoughts or whatever you want to say in that minute, and then we'll wrap it up. Haseeb, we'll go the opposite way this time. Haseeb, you want to go first?
Well, I think that, frankly, there are two number things that are important. One is social security number with cell phone protection. Please, for the love of God, don't go into family plan and don't go into corporate plan, man. These are the weakest links, you know. And try to fix your cell phone security and do small things. Like, you know, you can do, like, literally two-factor authentication, you know, having passpin on your phone, have a port lock, and using a firewall, and you'll be protected from 99% of the attacks. That's all. Please do it for yourself.
Got it.
Or
Riley?
Let me do it for you, and I will take your money.
Bitcoin?
We someday will take Bitcoin, but no, we're not a privacy. We're not a crime. VPN. We use VPN technology to get you and your internet sessions to an IDS solution, just like any enterprise would do. For me, the best thing you can do is exactly as Steve was saying, check your mobile security, turn two-factor from SMS-based to an authenticator-based solution just as soon as you can. Replacing your SMS stream or hijacking your SMSs is not as hard as it might seem. So it's just really important that you go outside of the phone company-based solution. You need something that's in like an authenticator app. And other than that, yeah, make sure that you, every device you use, and ideally every device in your home, has some kind of a security story for it. And if you take it outside the home, make sure that that's something strong.
Excellent. Ron?
So I'm gonna reinforce both what both of them said, right? So things like VPN, multi-factor authentication go a long way towards making yourself more secure. I'm gonna use an analogy. I've used this analogy a few times. And if you're walking down a street in Beverly Hills and you see this massive mansion and the gate's wide open, there's a little, you know, Yogi Om symbol up on the door. They've got a 5-pound chihuahua, you know, and it's all open and beautiful and expensive. But you don't see, and then the house right next to it's the exact same house, but there's a 200-pound Rottweiler and there's a big, you know, we shoot first and ask questions later and a big iron steel gate fence with security cameras everywhere. Where are you going to go for your, where's the bad guy going to go for their free meal, right? They're going to go to that house that's the easy target. Making yourself a more difficult target. Password managers go a long way. If you have to use passwords in this day and age, that helps. But multi-factor authentication, things like VPN, all those things to make your personal space more secure actually usually translate into making the workspace more secure.
You're on mute, Jonathan.
All right, everybody. Well, hey, you know, you three, I really appreciate you all being here. We'll make sure that in the comments of here that we'll have each one of our speakers put their information so you can get in touch with them via Twitter. I'm sure that you can reach out to these gentlemen via Twitter or LinkedIn. I'm sure they'll respond. Everybody, thank you for watching our TF Labs live. If you've enjoyed this, do me a favor and just give this a like and share it out so we can make sure that we get this in front of other people. And then also so we just know if we should keep doing this. So please make sure that you are followed and subscribed on our podcast as well as YouTube and on our social channels. We're just TF Labs everywhere. I'm Jonathan G. Blanco. Thanks so much. And we'll see you all soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.